Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, the shark, babe, has such teeth there, and it shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife has old Maggie Heath, babe, and it keeps it out of sight.
Hi, everybody. This is Wayne Glenn with the Walking Mob with our show for today. In a few seconds, we hope that our guest will be calling in, and we can talk about her great book, True Hollywood Noir. But she's not yet called in, so I could try to kill a couple of minutes with my beautiful voice as we wait for her to call in. Hopefully everything's okay on her end. She's supposed to come on the show yesterday, but yesterday we had quite the problem here at my home, and we had to postpone the show for the day. These things happen. You have to understand that, you know, in real life, and like anything can happen, it most likely will. And you have to roll with the punches and go from there. And again, as I stated to the day, early in the week, that being a 30-minute show, if I can't get the guest on the air right off, it's really, truly nothing. But it's like, we know what's going on. We have a technical problem with Talk Radio, and we'll try again. Sometimes when things screw up, things screw up. Perhaps I might have typed in the wrong number. See, these things happen. You have to roll with it. And big fingers and small keyboards don't work out well sometimes. Hopefully I correct that mistake. Big fingers and little keyboards. And I suspect it's my fault because I probably hit the wrong key. And it happens. That's what I mean by rolling with it. And hopefully should be the number I sent her will work, and we will be on the air with her just in a few more seconds. And I appreciate people hanging on. Again, this is live radio. Reminds me a lot of the days of the Mercury Theater out there with Orson Welles. Okay. Now I'm an idiot. Now I'm an idiot. I'm an idiot. And bear with us, please. Because guess what? She'll be in there again, too. Because, you know, when things rain, they pour. This goes to show you have to roll those punches. I can remember reading about Olsen Wells when the lights would be turned off in the middle of an act. It was something to deal with, but yet they dealt and then they drove on. Same thing here. When I make a mistake, you have to pick up the ball and you have to fix it right as fast as you possibly can. Down with your small fingers and drive on. And note to self is wear my glasses in the morning working the keyboard. What I really truly like about early Hollywood history as we got from Keller was it's full of craziness, absolute craziness, and True Hollywood Noir is a book full of craziness and crazy ideas and crazy people doing crazy things. And I thought Hollywood today was weird. Wow, nothing like the early days. And I expect our guests will be more than happy to talk to us about that. Now, I guess we'll bring her on a couple more times because I'll make sure she gets all the credit she so richly deserves with the craziness of Hollywood and my screwing up this morning. And again, I apologize to everybody involved, but, you know, things happen, mistakes get made, I make my share, and then some, especially when I don't have a cat nearby to supervise me, and it goes from there. Again, she has to call, it's precious to call, and it doesn't really take that long, but it can. Let's hope that the error that Beth was going on was resolved this with this last exchange of stuff, and we'll take it as it comes. It's wild. I think what's most interesting about Hollywood is throughout the dawn of time, it was pitched as the place of dreams. You know, people could go to Hollywood and get discovered in a street corner. People could go to Hollywood and to be discovered in a coffee shop. People could be discovered, and the next day we become rich beyond imagination. That's, you know, was pitched then, it's even pitched that way today. But yet, when you read other newspapers, read accounts of real life accounts, history, you find out that that wasn't really the case. That for every success story, for every girl that got discovered at a coffee shop counter, hundreds and thousands of them went home broken, dejected, some drug addicted, some turned to prostitution, all kinds of horrific things occurred. And it's wild that people still to this day, again, go out to Hollywood because they will be that next Hollywood star. I do some stuff with B-Film, and I hear that all the time. That I'm going to be different. I'm going to be the one who's going to make it big. That I don't care if I have to starve. I don't care if I have to do this, I have to do that. I will do whatever because it will be what it takes for me to make it. And sadly, that's not the case. I mean, I read the other day a few places. It was reported that 99%, that 90% of the members of the Screen Actor Guild did not make any money in acting. Why would you be there then? I know it takes time to get an acting career up and running and all these other things I do, but why would you go to Hollywood, go through hell, join a union that you pay horrific union dues to, and not make any money in your chosen profession? It'd be like if I was a member of the plumbers union here in Racine and was unable to get a job at an employer. I mean, I wouldn't be a plumber very long at all. I would find someone else to do, like show and sell, which we'll get sometimes today, too. It is wild. And the stories that the author of the book, True Hollywood Noir, talk about, it's just weird. I mean, murders of deceit, lies. Oh, it's just wild. It's just incredible. I'm looking forward to having her on the air to do that. And we'll see what kind of a message I can get her. To her, I apologize for the dead air. And the only problem is that the original problem was still going on. There's nothing I can do about that at all. Well, here she is. Okay, for now we have her on the air. Good morning, ma'am. I do apologize for my mess up this morning. I do hope the boys from the walking map do not come and break my bones for that. Please forgive me.
I don't think they will. I'm Dina DiMombro.
Okay, thank you, ma'am. We have our people eagerly waiting to hear all about you and your book, so let's just start off with a question. Ma'am, what got you interested in writing, and what got you interested in writing about the true Hollywood crimes that went on through the ages?
My two great loves are unsolved mysteries, cold cases, and classic movies. And I like to say this book is Turner Classic Movies, TCM meets the Investigation Discovery Channel. It's got both.
It does. I mean, I sat down and I read it cover to cover in a period of a couple of hours. I mean, it's that fascinating. It's just stories and it's wild. And to think, I watch my share of movies, I'm sure, and some of them are really crazy ones, right? But these things really happen.
Yes.
Now,
what happened behind the screen, behind the scenes, is a lot more fascinating even than what happened in front of the cameras.
Absolutely. I mean, if we can, I like to start off with talking about my favorite story that you wrote about, which was Bob Crane.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, I grew up, Hogan Cereals was a mainstay in our household. We watched it each week religiously, right? And I knew anything about the actors at the time I was a child. I would have guessed that Bob Crane was your typical everyday kind of nice guy. And then when I was a little older, he died, you know, he was murdered. But you read your book, the Bob Crane on TV and the Bob Crane that was really truly in real life were two different people.
Yeah, I do think, though, that he had, they didn't talk about sex addictions in those days, but I think that that's what happened to him. It overtook his life. I mean, he was a family man, a lot of children,
right.
Catholic. He's got this hit show and he starts playing the drums. He liked to play the drums. He was in music all his life and playing drums in strip clubs. And he's famous. He's good looking. And it just, this addiction just sort of overtook him. And then getting involved with that John Carpenter who sold video equipment. And in those days, you know, these big clunky VCRs and cameras and in those days, you didn't hear about private sex tapes. First he started with just using it, for family stuff. And then he gets involved with this guy and they start filming everything. And I think it just overtook his life.
I think that's correct. And because even today it's 2016, addiction is given a dirty name. You know, if you're addicted to something, be it heroin or whatever, you're less of a person, it seems. I can see why people don't want to talk about it as a disease. How do we fix it? How do we go on from our addiction? Now, that's very true. That's very true. How hard was it for you to gain the research material to cover these stories, ma'am?
I've been collecting it all my life. I mean, I kept every book, every TV show on those old clunky VCR tapes that I was just talking about. I kept them. And then I transferred them to DVD. For some reason, I never got rid of any documentaries or any books or, you know, before the internet even, where you could look up anything. I mean, I have virtually my own library because I loved the work of the people that I wrote about. So I had all their movies. And I would, and then when I decided to write this book, I got the autopsy reports and things on forensic evidence. But I just kept everything all these years. From the time I was a kid, I was collecting movie star biographies and films. I had it all. And I thought, well, why I would write a book, not just because I wrote one previously where I did interviews with classic TV stars of the 50s and 60s. And then I thought, no, I was fascinated by all these cold cases and unsolved crimes. So I kind of melded them together. I also interviews for this book. Also did
really?
My own interviews. Yes. I interviewed, I did a chapter on the murder suicide of actor Gig Young. He killed his young wife and then killed himself. Well, I interviewed one of his girlfriends. She told me what he was really like and how, what she believed. And I interviewed, people who, were involved. I was lucky enough, started with the Johnny Stampinato and Lana Turner case. I found a guy who knew Johnny Stampinato and was Mickey Cohen's right-hand man.
Mm-hmm.
And when I interviewed him, I got all kinds of information that had never been published. And he shared with me everything. So that's when I decided to do the Mickey Cohen chapter, because he said, you know, everybody has gotten it wrong. They only talk about one side of him. He's portrayed as a sort of a cartoon character it was not a well-rounded portrayal of him. So what you have in my book on the chapter in Mickey Cohen, you wouldn't find in 50 other books, because this man knew him and was with him every day. And he shared his stories with me. And that was Jim Smith. And I was very, very fortunate to get that interview. He also knew Robert Blake. So I had a little bit on that chapter. And I interviewed the fellow that lived in Robert Blake's guest house, an actor named John Solari, and he was privy to what was going on with Blake and his wife. So I was lucky. I did my own interviews besides keeping every documentary and every book and every then I started getting police reports and autopsy reports. So that's how the research came about.
That's incredible. I mean, that's here in Richland, Wisconsin. It seems we can't even, the reporters that we have here can't even get the mayor's name spelled twice the same way, which is sad. But here you are out in California digging into cases, you know, talking to people involved in those cases is indeed awe-inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like the job that you did with Mr. Cohen, because you're absolutely correct. He has a very bad rap, and it's glad to have another side of that interesting man brought out to the public.
And you would not believe the heat I've taken for that. People have criticized me. Yeah, and it's like, well, you know, I'm all these years, for decades, people get it wrong, and then they publish. They only say the horrible stuff. They don't have it right at all. For instance, that movie that recently came out, and this upset Jim a lot. This Gangster Squad movie. It was like a cartoon. It was like, you know, there was no big gang war in Chinatown. They made all that stuff up. Most of the stuff that you see even in these films, like Warren Beatty is Bugsy or whatever, it's not quite accurate. And that upset Jim Smith very much. And he wanted something out there that had things put the way it really was. And I was so fortunate to talk to him, because he really provided a lot. He provided what was new and untapped to me. And we lost him this year, and we lost Jim Smith this year, and I just wanted to, in a way, pay tribute, because, you know, he wanted to set the record straight, and in these last couple of years when we worked on this book, he did.
I'm glad that he took the opportunity to get that record straight, because, you know, it's important that we know the true story behind the different men that we might read about one day, that there are more than one side of everyone. And simply to have someone beaten about the press who no longer can defend themselves is absolutely very, very inferior to their memories and families.
And what he would also say to me, Jim, was that, how did he put it? He said, you know, it just drove him nuts, really, that they got it wrong. And now I just lost my train of thought there. But he wanted a well-rounded portrayal, and I think we did that. I know what I was going to say. He told me, hey, I'm not trying to whitewash it. He did kill people. He did do this. You know, he did, but it was involved in business. He wasn't going around and going after innocent people or whatever. If it was a war, then he did what he had to do, that kind of thing. And he said, so he wasn't trying to whitewash anything. He just wanted to give a well-rounded portrayal of Mickey and some of the things that he did that were good, and the friends he had in Hollywood. He was that was the tie-in with my book. He was really good friends with a lot of people, Sinatra and Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis and all the people he was friends with in Hollywood. So,
I mean, the whole mob connection with 2 points, if I may. I'm no expert. I'm not even close to being an expert. I've talked to people. I've had some people on my show and the like. I've understood one thing. If I live my life the way I should live my life, I will never, ever, ever meet anyone that most likely would be involved with the mafia, as we might define it, right? Therefore, I really have nothing to worry about. If I'm looking to do something wrong, I'm going to do some loan sharking, say, if I'm going to run drugs, say, run a prostitution ring or the like, yes, I'm going to meet bad people who are more than willing to do bad things. That's what it takes. I mean, most of us will never, never even know that the guy we might be talking to in the house that's like ours might, let's say, have a side job doing something that we may not appreciate. I mean, we are pretty safe.
And one of the things Jim said too, it was a job. You know, it was like it was a job. It's not that somebody's going around doing that 24 hours a day. It's a job like any other job, is the way he put it. The people have families and you know, the whole thing, and it's not, you know, it was a job, is the way he put it to me.
Yes, I think that's a fair way to put it. And again, yes, the map has interesting links into Hollywood, interesting links, and still do in both Vegas and Hollywood, more Hollywood than Vegas anymore. And you can't go back in the past and change those acts that happened.
Mm-hmm.
But to ignore that they happened and talk legitimately about the people and give them credit where credit is due, I think is disingenuous to us as a nation. It's nice to know the whole history of a country, right?
Yes.
You know, I mean, and then going back to what was going on in Hollywood at the time, I mean, if you look at Marilyn Monroe, she was horribly used by people. Most of the people who used her horribly, they weren't in mafia, they were in government.
Mm-hmm. Write about Marilyn Monroe because it had been so done. So that one I didn't include in my book because there's so much out there. But yes, I agree with you. She was used by everybody. She did have mob connections, and she did have, she did have, and of course, the men in Hollywood and men in government, as you say.
Yeah, yeah. And it goes to show that behind every story, there's more stories, which are more stories and more stories. I mean, even when we talk about, I'm so bad with pronunciations and themes. That man that we started off the conversation about Mickey Cohen with, right? I mean, he was a man, he had a family, right? And Hollywood had a vested interest to make sure that the truth, if it reflected badly in Hollywood, was that could come out. So if they could pin it on somebody else, they're going to do exactly that. You see that?
Yes, definitely.
I mean to cut you off.
Mm-hmm. No, that's okay.
We see this with the killing of our great hero, George Reeves, as Clark Kent, you know. I mean, there's no way that his wife was going to take the blame for anything that she might have done. That was not going to happen.
No. And you know, the thing is that what was going on with Reeves that I point out in my chapter, he was involved with the George Reeves, who played TV Superman in the 50s. He was involved with a studio head's wife, Eddie Mannix's wife, Toni Mannix. And he had an affair with her for years. She bought his house. I mean, and Eddie Mannix didn't mind because it freed him up to do what he wanted to do. If her time was occupied with Reeves, they even went to church together. It was a very strange thing, the three of them. Okay, then Reeves decides that he wants this other woman, a younger woman, Lenore Lemon. And so he gets engaged to her, and Toni Mannix goes completely crazy. I mean, she was obsessed with George, and she stole his dog. His brake fluid was leaked out of his car somehow. She was threatening him, so he got one of the first answering machines, like a reel-to-reel one in the 50s, to record the calls. He got a restraining order against her. Now he's found dead, and they say he shot himself in the head, but there were bullet casings under his back and bullet holes around the room. So, no, the studio covered everything up in those days. They were all powerful.
Yes, they were. And they still are today. I mean, we read today now where we find out that a star died tragically of a drug overdose, and yet we find out that the studios had to know the star had drug issues, where today, where I live, you go to your employer with a drug issue, most would do what they can to get you treatment. In Hollywood, as long as you can perform, we don't care. We'll look the other way. You know, and to me, that's
not
only...
In the case of Judy Garland, I think they got her addicted. In Judy Garland, they wanted her to lose weight. They wanted her to sleep. Yeah. They wanted her to wake up. You know, so they fed her the pills. So it was kind of encouraged.
Yes, it was. I mean, Judy Garland, if a case like Judy Garland happened today in Hollywood, I think with the new laws enacted, people would go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
And they treated that poor girl horribly. She was a minor.
Yes.
You know, but yeah, and again, it's one thing if Wayne Klingman, who's a 59-year-old man, goes Hollywood and he gets into a situation of his own free will, right? It's nothing altogether when you're a minor child. I think that Julie was, Ms. Garland was the sole means to support for her family at one time, right?
Yeah, all of her sisters were singers, but she was the one, the spotlighted one, you know. But it's, yes, they, and one thing I see different in the culture now is in the old days, they built people up. The studios built them up into mythical figures. And then somebody got in trouble, it was covered up. Now, mm-hmm. with the paparazzi, not that the paparazzi and it wasn't around then, they were, but now somebody does something and it's all over instantaneously, all over the news, all over social media. Then they grab it and they go with it, and they've gone totally the other way to tear people down, build them up, tear them down. Where in those days, all they wanted to do was cover stuff up.
Right, absolutely. We need to find out where we can find you online. Where can we find you online, ma'am?
My website is TrueHollywoodNoir, NOIR.net. And my book is on Amazon. That's the best place, and on Barnes & Noble. But Amazon is where you can get it as a Kindle and print book.
All right. Thank you, ma'am. And are you on Facebook?
Yes. I have a True Hollywood Noir page on Facebook as well and on Twitter.
Okay. Yes, that's where I found you, was on Twitter. And I appreciate the connection.
Yes.
I mean, I'm sorry?
I appreciate it, too. Thank you.
Oh, no, I mean, you are really a good writer. It's great, and you love the subject matter. And matter that you write about, and you can tell by the stories, I mean, they're well-written, they're well-documented. The fact is that you love your subject, and you love the people that you talk about as a fan, and you're not out, in my opinion, to rip down someone's memory after they died and can't defend themselves. Again, what you did for Mr. Cohen, I think is the work of a saint.
Well, I was lucky to talk to someone who knew everything and knew stuff about before he even got involved with Cohen. You know, Mickey told him stories about, I had stories in there about Ben Siegel and Virginia Hill and Al Capone. And he knew, I mean, he heard those stories firsthand from Mickey. So I was very, very fortunate to talk to him, and a lot of what's new and different came because of the interviews I did with him.
Yeah, I appreciate you doing the chat, and Mr. Cohen, and I myself, if I may, I'm going to reach out to someone I know with that also does all this stuff in mafia, especially mafia from the 30s, and see if I can introduce you to see how you guys might be able to talk about Mr. Cohen together and maybe help his audience understand more about that, because to me, if the more we understand about our past, the better we understand our future.
That's so true.
I mean, going back to Bob Crane, which is, again, my favorite story that you wrote about, the little English lady's told me right out of time, but I'd like to apologize again for my error and not get you on the show correctly this morning. It's totally my fault, and I'd like to have you on again sometime as soon as we might be able to do so, ma'am.
Sure, that would be lovely. Thank you, and I really appreciate you having me on the show. Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you, ma'am. Time went by so fast, as I always do. Everybody out there today, go to her webpage now, this very second, and buy her book. If you can buy two copies, because they make also great Christmas gifts. And you know someone, we all know someone who really is a big Hollywood fan like we are, and really would appreciate this book as a Christmas stocking stuffer. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. I apologize to you again, ma'am. And with that, you have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you, ma'am. Bye-bye, everybody. And thanks, everybody, for listening. I appreciate it. Talk to y'all later. Bye-bye.